This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay. So for purposes of roll call, I believe we have Judge Borak, Judge Cope, Judge Bakke, Judge Cayetti, Judge Smith, Judge Seidler. We have a number of members of the public listening in, and as judicial counsel staff, we have Diane Nunn, Don Will, Audrey Fancy. Am I missing any members or staff? Okay. Judge Cope and Judge Borak?
You want to take it, Judge Borak?
Sure. Do we want to approve the minutes from the last meeting first?
I would move approval.
I would second, Judge Smith.
All right. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes as submitted. Any objections, additions, corrections? All right. Then the minutes of the last meeting are hereby approved. Okay. Our first item on the agenda. Welcome to everybody. It seems like we have a lot of people listening in on this call. And thank you to members for giving up your valuable time to work on this project. Our first item would be the update on the survey and the focus groups. Staff?
Thanks, Judge Borak. We, at the last meeting, the members looked at a really two surveys, a financial survey for program managers and a general assessment for program managers of dependency council programs around the state of the quality of service they were able to provide, their caseload, and other concerns. At the meeting, we decided to add focus groups of line attorneys who would be able to comment on that and also be able to comment in some detail on the timeliness or the minutes per event matrix that is in the old caseload funding model and will be one of the major pieces that this committee looks at and updates or not. So the we had a number of comments on the survey. We ran it past all of the members of the public who commented on this process as it's been developing since the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meetings last year, the meetings this year, and we also ran it, of course, past this group. We rolled the survey out to providers a couple of days ago. We got some other comments that from the committee that were actually, I think we want to roll out a kind of updated instructions for the survey to incorporate those because there were some good points about the terms we were using and how some of them needed to be defined. So I think we're going to do that today, roll out a kind of update and instructions. But providers have the survey. We are still trying to kind of chain together and find more providers we don't know to get the surveys to them. We asked for the survey to be due September 4th, and our in-person meeting will be September 17th. So that we should have time to bring you the bulk of the data submitted. We also at that meeting for discussion. We also held our first focus group. We're scheduling four focus groups and then a debrief meeting with other parties who might want to join. So we have a focus group for Bay Area attorneys that actually occurred on Monday. We have one for Sacramento area, one for Burbank area, and I think we're going to schedule either Central Valley or Inland Empire, San Bernardino, Riverside, Imperial, depending on availability of participants and whether we can find space. The first focus group was really good. We had attorneys from five Bay Area counties, and that included draft and non-draft courts, and it included under-resourced, severely under-resourced courts, and courts who are not so under-resourced. And the strategy for the focus groups has been to use a case scenario and walk the participants through the case scenario, have them react to what they would be doing, how long the task would take, and have them compare to their answers and information to the minutes per event, again, that were that we use in the caseload funding model that were established in 2004. So to give you a sense of the group, it was 3 hours long. We plunged into our scenario, and we made it to the juris dispo hearing, although we were supposed to go all the way in our scenario to reunification and then do another scenario. So people are extremely engaged. They're giving us lots of information. At later focus groups, we'll be able to move more quickly over some of the things we've looked at in real detail and move on to maybe other parts of the hearing and other comments on what attorneys are experiencing.
Don,
so that, yes.
This is Judge Cope. I recall that there were discussions about some of us might, if we were available, might want to attend those focus groups and listen in. Do you see any issues with that?
No. No, I don't. And so the ones that, and I'm really glad you just reminded us of that. So there's a focus group in Sacramento on September 1st. There's a focus group in Burbank on September 18th. And then, Judge, we are hoping to do one in your area probably later in September.
This is Judge Borak. What is the time set for the focus group on September 1st?
We will look that up while we're talking and let you know.
And Burbank too, right?
Yes.
Judge Cope, this is David Yamasaki. Sorry for joining late.
Great, thanks.
Don, I'm sorry, could you tell me, is there one in the Bay Area? Did I miss that, or is there not?
Yes, the one in the Bay Area was on Monday, and some of the...
Okay,
I'm very sorry. We were scrambling to put it together and didn't do our invitations to the committee the way we should have. There will be one. It is taped, and so if you're interested in listening to the tape, we can make that available.
Okay. Thanks.
And the Sacramento group is 1 to 4 p.m.
Thank you.
Will that be the same for Burbank?
The Burbank group is 9:30 to 12:30 in the morning.
Thank you very much.
Another thing that occurred to us staff after the first focus group was that during the Blue Ribbon Commission meetings, we did focus groups and then put together a panel of some of the focus group attendees, and then the commission were able to speak to the panel at one of their meetings and question them. So along with attending the groups, if you're interested, we could pull together a group of attorneys who could be available either at the in-person meeting in September or later in this process. Okay. So that's the survey and focus groups. The only thing I'd flag for the focus groups, they have been taking a little time to put together, so only two of them will have taken place by the time we have our September 17th meeting, so we'll be able to present what we heard there, but there will still be a couple more after that meeting.
John, this is Judge Borak. About how many people attended the first focus group meeting in the Bay Area?
Nine. We limited the number of participants to we were aiming for no more than 12 and hoping for 8 to 10, and we had 9.
And this is Seth Seidler. Now, these are for courtroom case-carrying attorneys, correct? Not the managers?
Yes. No, not the managers.
I think that if you change the Burbank one to the afternoon instead of the morning, it's going to be easier for attorneys to attend who are courtroom attorneys.
Okay. Okay, can I answer any other questions on the survey or the focus groups?
Yes, John, this is Judge Borak. You indicated that there would be some additional instructions or something that would go out that would help the managing attorneys who are filling out these surveys in response to the comments from the committee. Will you inform the committee members also about what those, what's going to go out to the people regarding the
survey? Yes. And I think given that they have the survey, Judge, the comment that I wanted to, the instruction I wanted to get out to them most was, defining the terms like adequate and regular. So we thought that we would put that together today, and I can certainly circulate them to the committee right away for comment.
Thank you, and I'm apologize for my late comments. I'll be more prompt the next time.
Well, they're good comments, and so we want to adjust the survey so people have the benefit of them.
Right. Sherry Carter had suggested prior to my comment that there be kind of a follow-up question about to have them define what they would call their ability to have what they would call adequate time or adequate resources or things mm-hmm. like that. I assume that you I'm not sure. Did you accept that comment, and are you including that in the survey?
We made that change, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Great. I have nothing more on the survey or the focus groups. Anybody else?
Okay.
Okay, then let's move on to item number 3. The review of county council salary data.
And this is in the materials on page headed associate assistant or deputy county council salary information.
It's page 18 in the PDF, Don, it looks like.
Thank you. This is an update of a survey that we've done before. We created it from the county. It's not really a survey. We created it from the county human resources websites. And summarized it so that most counties have four levels of deputy or associate county counsel. So we group them in the class one or two and class three or four. Then we took the class one or two, and with the minimum and maximum range, we put in a midpoint. And then we put the workload, the final column that says workload model estimate, that's the figure for each county that our current workload model uses to estimate the cost of a line attorney in that county. So it's not what attorneys are necessarily getting paid. We'll know that from the survey, but it's what the judicial counsel is using to say, well, if the caseload tells us that Alameda needs 10 attorneys, then each of those attorneys we estimate are going to be paid $95,892, just to use the first county on the list. So you can compare the mid-range of the low-end deputy county council salary with what the caseload funding model is using as an estimate on those last two columns.
Now, this is Judge Zeidler. The mid-range is not an average, but it is a true mid-range of if they've got three people at 100,000 and one at 20,000, then it's going to be more like 70 because you're looking at based on the current employee, because what I'm looking at isn't the middle of two. So how is the mid-range determined?
The mid-range is the
one and two.
Yeah, it's the midpoint for just the one and two class.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And it's not based on any reality that we know of for what the, average salary would be in that county. At this point, it's just based on we pay from 81,000 to 122,000, so we're putting the midpoint as 101,000.
And this is Judge Borak. Can you tell me how you achieve the number, the cost of a line attorney, that estimate?
That comes from the process in 2004-2005, they at that point the judicial council staff did a county council survey like this, and they also used an economic study that the council was using at that time for other budgetary purposes. So what they did was they grouped counties into four economic zones, and then they gave each zone a single salary. You'll see if you look that they're really in this workload model estimate only four salaries, depending on what economic region the county is in. So, and then they took I don't know if it was an average or a midpoint or what from the county council survey, but they basically set a salary for each of those regions.
Don, this is Judge Bakke. I have a question about that as well. That estimate, does that have any kind of variance built in for, let's say, someone that's been dependency counsel for two or less years versus someone who's been there for 15 years? Because there's a pretty big difference
right, in
what somebody should be getting paid. Not that the person that's been there 2 years is any less of an attorney as far as the quality of work product, but you know, that seems like it should be at least part of it. Because in some of these counties, as we all know, the higher up you get in the food chain as county council or in the county council's office, you then get into supervisory issues, and you're not necessarily representing the county in CPS proceedings per se, but you're a supervisor. So maybe the numbers are kind of skewed in that way as well.
Yeah. So the answer is yes and no. The original matrix, which I'll send around again, of the it was buried in one of the reports of the salary ranges. There is a range in each region, and what you're seeing now for if the salary in Alameda that the Judicial Council is using is $95,892. That's actually the midpoint of a three salary range. So it's like $85,000, $95,000, $105,000. The flip side to that, though, is that in using the model to estimate the here's the total cost for dependency council around the state, it doesn't use a range of salaries. We just employ the midpoint to get to that number. Here's what we think it costs in each county, and here's what it costs statewide. So that would be a thing to look at if we wanted to use a range of salaries for each county, and then what the appropriate weight would be to give the low, medium, and high salary, or something like that.
This is Judge Borak. There is some interesting data on this page. Just a couple of points. Looking at the kind of the Bay Area counties, Contra Costa, Marin, San Francisco, Alameda. For Contra Costa, Marin, and San Francisco, they seem to have the same workload model figure exactly, $14,800. San Francisco seems to lump all of its county councils into class one or two. They don't seem to have a three or four. But the highest level there obviously is more comparable to the three and four than they are to the one and the two.
Yeah.
I don't know what all of that means. I've just found it interesting.
And for that and for some of these other anomalies in here, we'll go to these counties before we get to the meeting in September and straighten out how they do their ranges. I think that what the subcommittee might think about today is what would be useful as we work building up to the meeting in September, and as you look at this chart and think of other information available, what would be useful to have to be able to have that discussion about, well, what should we be saying about what the attorneys are going to get paid in a revised workload model?
And listen, Don, I am a staunch advocate, this is Judge Botke, for attorneys in this line of work, if not many other lines of work, getting more funding and whatnot. But I still have that concern that if you skew it on the high end with people that are, in essence, and I know, look, people need supervisors, and CPS attorneys working in county council need supervisors, but we're still talking about money to the ground troops here, you know, not necessarily all the way up the ladder. And I just want to make sure that there isn't you know, some sort of unfair skewing with regard to the high end. I want to make sure everybody gets paid in a fair and equitable manner as far as the allocation goes and things such as that, but I know there's just there's an issue there.
Okay.
Don, this is Judge Cayetti. Can you confirm these numbers are based on, did I get it right, 2001 to 2005, or are these current numbers?
The numbers that we're using for the Judicial Council numbers?
Correct.
Those are still in play from the 2001 to 2005 work that went into the council's final report.
Okay. Thanks.
So this is Judge Smith, and I wanted to just ask, because when the previous question was whether or not there may be a tendency to skew high, but the mid-range that you are listing is between classes, minimum and maxes of classes 1 and 2, right? So that would actually be the midpoint of the lower ranges, except for the anomaly of, say, a San Francisco that doesn't seem to have anything higher than class 1 or 2.
Right. Yeah, that, okay. That's the mid-range there.
This is Judge Borak. Judge Bakke, I have a question for you. Are you suggesting that perhaps averages would be better than mid-range? In other words, if there are, you know, 10 attorneys, but they're all down at the bottom, and then there's one that is the supervisor for those 10 attorneys that's up at the top, that then using the mid-range would not be appropriate? I just want to clarify what your comment is.
I think that is probably more well said, Judge Borak, because that could be the issue, and maybe that type of specific situation is an outlier. I just wasn't sure based on what was presented here, but I think the way you have phrased it is probably more appropriate. And again, Don, I don't know how often that would happen and if statistically that would be relevant. But, you know, having come from the world of government practice and, indeed, private practice on both sides of the CPS fence, I did know that throughout many counties you did have a pretty big variance there. And, again, I'm just concerned that you're getting the money to where it's most needed, which is the people that are in court doing the work. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form disparaging any kind of supervisor, because someone has to supervise those people as well, but I just want to make sure the money's going to the right place.
Yeah. And we will know more about that after the program manager survey comes back, too. We should have pretty good information on what the current practice is for supervisor versus line attorneys.
Now, this is Judge Zeidler. The workload model estimate is a little confusing to me because, for example, only because it's the only number I have, it's showing Los Angeles, the workload model estimate as being 95,892. But the letter that we received from Los Angeles dependency lawyers with the materials says that their attorneys at 10 years are still somewhere around 80,000 or 85,000. I don't remember what it said. I just had it up on my screen. His letter says that they're making about $80,000 for our parents and children's attorneys with 10 years experience. So why does the workload funding estimate differ so much from what they're really paying their attorneys?
Well, that reason would be, I mean, partly the salaries are just estimates, but this is the estimate of what they would need to pay then an adequate number of attorneys to serve at the council caseload of 188 cases per child. So we know that Los Angeles doesn't have, and certainly until the new budget allocation, didn't have anything close to that amount. They had about 70% of what they needed. So, in fact, that would mean that the attorneys would have to be making a good deal less than what this workload model estimate says they ought to be making. So this is what an attorney could make if the county was funded at 100% of the workload model.
And this is, now this is the previous, the current funding model. When you say workload model estimate, this is the current funding?
Well, this is what, this is the model we're still using. So these are the salaries that go into that model. The 70% would be based on the FY14-15 funding without the additional monies that Los Angeles got from the new governor's budget.
What confuses me is that if the attorneys have much higher caseloads than 188, then that means that their firm should be having even more money to pay than less, and they're still not anywhere near this number.
I think the lack of funding shows up both in the higher caseload and the lower salary. So
no, because if I'm getting funded to pay someone to have 188 cases, and instead they have 250, that means I have less attorneys to give more money to.
Well, that's what could happen in the model, but how the attorney, how the funding's allocated is up to the court and county and attorney managers, so that doesn't happen all that often that attorneys are given the full salary that the model says. With extremely high caseloads, usually a bit of both gets depressed. The caseload is higher than it ought to be, and the salary is lower than it ought to be, and that's how the firm is able to make its the amount it has in its budget.
Don, this is Judge Bakke again. As Judge Zeidler was referring to that letter, Zeke, I assume you're talking about the July 30th, 2015 letter from LA Dependency Lawyers, Inc.?
Correct.
Okay. One other question I had about that, Don, is the request in that overall, it seems pretty straightforward, but tying those figures with respect to dependency counsel, not on the government side, but for the kids and the parents, to the, for example, Associate County Counsel in Los Angeles County, the one thing that isn't mentioned in that letter that I think needs to be addressed some way is the government has a lot more in the way of resources for their attorneys, i.e., if you're working with CPS, your county social services. I think we all know that the government side of the equation has those resources available to them where they are not in any way, shape, or form not doing a lot of work, because they are, but they have the CPS staff and social services providing them with information, whereas the private side does not have that other than, of course, you know, paralegals, investigators, and office staff. I mean, is that taken into consideration when you're talking about non-governmental salaries for dependency caseloads?
No, it's not. The model, so the equation that we use does specify an amount for overhead, which is where some of those resources would come from. And then it specifies investigators or social workers at a pretty low rate of $55,000 per year. So I would say
yes and no.
Yeah, sorry, I keep saying yes and no. I mean, there's an overhead calculation that to do the model that we do need to work through, but no, I think your point is right that it's that certainly the draft providers, who I know the most about, don't have access to the same kinds of services as a county attorney.
This is Jed Zeidler again. I just have to say that it's very hard to look at any of these numbers in relation to each other when we are only then funding 70% without having the 70% number in front.
Okay. So we are here as staff trying to come up with what will be most useful for the subcommittee when it works on the financial piece in person, and so we can we will have the data from the survey, which should show us, for instance, what the actual salaries are for a program that's only funded at 70%. So we will know that. We'll know what county council makes. And I guess one question would be what other pieces would be useful for that discussion?
I think this is Judge Borak. I think that we have to define what our objectives are in the use of this data in order to kind of drive it. In the end, if we discover, which probably we are all predicting that we will, that the attorneys who represent parents and children in dependency don't make as much as county council and don't even make as much as we think that they should if we were fully funded. If we're going to use that data to inform the legislature and the governor, then it's constructed in one way. If we're going to use that data to provide information to ourselves about how underfunded we are, then I don't know how that helps us for our current situation.
You are right, and it's very hard to discuss formula and look at real numbers and try and ignore the real numbers and get back to formula.
Yeah, I think that what we're looking at is kind of, you know, the fairness approach such that everybody attempts to get under and without using numbers that aren't skewed by some counties' over generosity or miserliness or something like that. I think we have to keep that in mind when we look at this data. Don, what do you think?
I agree with that. I think we can, I think we'll try and circulate ahead of the meeting to present, you know, this information, the survey information, whatever else we can glean, maybe in terms of a couple of, or of a few models, so that we can look at what would everything look like funded just at some kind of smooth curve of county council salaries. What does everything look like today, just looking at what the courts are actually paying? Some kind of midpoint between those two.
This is Sherry Carter, and first of all, I apologize for coming late. Sometimes things blow up you just can't control, and so I so much apologize for coming in late. And I've followed this discussion for the last few minutes, and Don, I'm happy to help when you do that analysis or the modeling. So I wanted to just announce myself, Judge. I'm really sorry I'm late, and anything I can do to help here. Have we talked at all about using a an average salary and then applying a BLS like we did in Waltham. BLS is the factor that adjusts both upward and downward based on the local cost of living with for that particular county. Did we discuss that at all?
No, I don't think we have.
Well, we did touch on averages. Judge Botke brought up earlier that just using a mid-range doesn't take into consideration the proportionate number of those at the higher range and those at the lower range. So we did talk about averages versus mid-range. And so that suggestion that you just made, Sherry, would probably dovetail with that.
It also might help. This is alphabetical order, and at our first meeting, you gave us the breakdown by the four or five regions of cost of living. Maybe it would be helpful to look at things that way instead of in alphabetical order.
Okay. And Sherry, I have been pulling the BLS calculations that go into Waltham and talking to folks here and making sure I understand them.
Okay.
Which I think is slowly beginning to happen. So
okay. Yeah.
We could use that as a way of kind of sorting this data out, the BLS index.
Okay. The governor and the legislature really liked the BLS factor on Waltham because it's a deflator or inflator based on your local cost of living. And one of the things the governor in particular does not like or did not like about the historical funding level for staff is that there was no way to deflate it if there were high costs that were not necessarily justified. So I'm just throwing it out as one of the things that we might want to talk about if we have time. Consider.
This is Judge Cayetti. Wouldn't it also be helpful to have what the actual payments are or the salaries are for, like, for example, for San Diego to compare what this is showing versus the reality of what our draft contract, for example, is paying or required to pay the employees or the attorneys?
Yes, and Judge, that should come from the survey that we're doing now.
Right.
And so
the,
then we
the contracts, I think, I remember seeing sure. Draft contracts, a certain salary range based on level of experience is my recollection.
Yeah, which is, right. So we can certainly show what the draft contract says and what the reality is.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure. Okay.
Shall we move on to our next item? Do we have does staff have enough direction on this salary data portion?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. Item number four on the agenda is time spent on a case. Take it away.
This is another piece where we were thinking more ahead to the in-person meeting and wanted you to see some a way of looking at the time data, because it's this piece that really then rolls up to how many attorneys a court needs. So the workload model presents the data in this way, which we summarized for you. We averaged parents and children's attorneys for this piece, just to get it all on one page. This shows you, if you're looking at the chart that's headed court-appointed counsel caseload model components, the model and also probably most ways we might do it divides it into case phases, which roughly divide out into the years in a case. This first page is through the detention hearing, and it shows you what the workload model that we use now says is required to get to the basic judicial counsel caseload level, which, remember, is 188 cases per person, per attorney, when they're supported by a half-time investigator or social worker. So the it's a weighted model. So if you look at just the first line, and for document review in the pre-detention phase, that happens on 100% of the cases. The committee that looked at the workload study data back when determined it should take 20 minutes. And since it's 100 cases, 100% of cases, then per case it's 20 minutes. If you look to the attorney doing notes and file, notes to file and drafting, that has a frequency of 64% of cases. It should take about 10 minutes. So the number of minutes that contributes to the final total is 6 minutes. Taking that all the way down, I'm looking at the model total minutes column. You can see the amount allocated for hearing preparations, 35 minutes for a hearing, or 126 minutes, a hearing with witnesses, 20 minutes, a hearing without witnesses, 15 minutes, and then 16 minutes is the average of those two. What we did really to get the conversation, so this is what the focus groups are looking at, among other things. Just to get the conversation started, what we did was analyze 2 years of data reported by the draft courts, and that would include all the courts. They do a snapshot time study every year. So this is data stretching. It's basically 2 snapshots per court, and this shows you kind of what current practice in at least 20 counties looks like compared to what practice in the model was. In detention hearing, it's close. You'll see down at total minutes, there's the workload model says it should take 197 minutes for a quote-unquote average case, and the draft data taken all together is coming out at 187 minutes. So probably in terms, given that data can be messy, that's probably basically a tie, a statistical tie. But there are real variances in where the time is going, and roughly speaking, the draft attorneys are telling us they're spending a lot more time in the courtroom than the workload model anticipated, and they're spending less time communicating with clients and outside persons. So I guess
But Don, this is Judge Borick. Just practically speaking, for a detention or pre-detention hearing, that makes sense. Most of the attorneys don't even know that they have a client or see them before they come to the court. And I think that they would probably lump hearing and hearing preparation. That would be meeting client, talking with client, interviewing, and all of those things. But usually that happens in court, just practically speaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it looks as though in the it looks as though detention is close, but the pre-juris dispo and dispo on the next page is not close, and the current practice starts to diverge more from the model. I think just in terms of process, let me note a couple other things. So at its simplest level of specifying how much time is needed for a case, there are six of these phases, that, and those span the roughly the years of the case. And they're fairly, the categories are fairly consistent across the cases, and we, again, for the in-person meeting and then for the work through the fall, have been, I guess, the more guidance we can get on what is a helpful way for you to go through this kind of information and decide whether time is being allocated appropriately or not, the more we can learn that, the more then we can set things up to make that happen.
So, John, this is Judge Borak again. You only gave us phase one and phase two from these reports that you were referring to, correct?
Yes, we did, because we wanted them to be more examples of ways of going through it, and then we can analyze the rest of the data and produce it. I also put in the packet what these look like from the, it's ahead of these charts, the, what the 2002 data looks like, and that has, that also has charts that have both a column for client and a column for parent time. I mean, some possibilities is we could use the data that we have now on current practice from draft to kind of flag where, as with the detention hearing, where there's where things are pretty, in this practice, pretty much the same, where they seem to be very different. Or the subcommittee might want to just take a fresh start and work through the case phases and assign times.
And can you tell me once again the difference between the one chart and the other, the one that's entitled Table 8 Caseload Model Basic Standard and the other one that we were discussing earlier?
They are, so for Table 8 Basic Caseload Standard, when you look at your chart for detention, the first three columns of that chart, the first with the percent frequency per case, the minutes, and the total minutes, are just a summary of that Table 8. We averaged the child and parent data, so we wouldn't have too many columns to look at, but it's basically the same the same data. Or I should, I'm sorry, I should say Table 8 is results coming out of out of more detailed tables that are in the 2002 workload model called the structured estimation models. But that data is the same in the charts we gave you today, the new charts. So the data is the same.
Well, I think one of the things that would be helpful to the subcommittee is if we could have these numbers compared, like where we are with the model, the data that you got from the draft counties, and the data that we collect from the surveys.
Okay.
And kind of see them side by side.
Okay.
Maybe that might be something that we would find would help inform us.
Okay.
Any other suggestions, committee members?
You know, I have been in conversation with one of our managing attorneys of lawyers who represent children, and his suggestion was perhaps to distinguish between child and parent clients looking in time per case. And it makes a certain amount of sense to me because one of the examples that he pointed out is that it can take longer for certain activities with a child client than with a parent client. And there may be just two, you know, maybe you need to look at those things very differently. And lumping them in is to just, you know, if you have a client, how are you communicating with your client or what are you doing with respect to that client?
And Judge, we can certainly break those out.
Thanks.
I know whenever I look at these numbers and charts, I get a headache. That was why I went to law school and not business school. Anyone else have any suggestions as to how it would be helpful to have this data done by staff?
I have one other question, though, and I don't know if this really relates to – this is Judge Smith, I'm sorry – about tasks for staff, but you may be able to answer this. And are the draft providers all over the state using the same instrument to maintain their timekeeping?
Yes, they are.
Different instruments?
No, they use the same database.
Okay.
Judge, one, we thought that what you just said that was a reason why at the focus group we didn't hand out this chart and say update it for us. What we did was run through a case scenario and so that then people could put some numbers on. How long would it take me to, you know, would I talk to a client here? What are some of the variations? And the issue with that, as I said, is that then it took us 3 hours to get through the first 6 weeks of the case. But there's other ways to do it, and we'll certainly have that information from the focus groups to say, here's what the attorneys we talked to, you know, here's how they would modify these tables.
Right, and these are really, really rough figures is the sense that I get that, for example, you know, the amount of time that you're going to spend, I don't know, talking to a client for any particular hearing. And the comment by Judge Cliff was, you know, the child's attorney thinks that they spend more time having to talk to children because I guess it's more difficult to talk to children, although some parents are more difficult even than their children are. And so it takes into consider, it's the adequate amount of time. It's not the best or most wonderful amount of time that you would spend if you had all of the time and all the money in the world. Those are the questions that we're asking, right?
Yes.
Okay. And if you have a client that's 6 months old, you spend no time actually talking to them, but you spend some time doing investigation, but maybe the attorney doesn't. And I can imagine it taking 3 hours because every time you think of a specific case, which is why I think it is good to use a case scenario, and I support that that approach, and hopefully you would be able to get through more than one case in the amount of 3 hour time that you have.
Right. But we can certainly work on building a way to show what data we have on these activities, to show what the attorneys in the focus groups are saying, to have it run through the entire life of the case, and then get it out to the subcommittee for some feedback to see if that would be helpful at the in-person meeting.
I think that would be helpful, Don. Thank you.
Okay. That's what we'll do.
Okay. And speaking of the in-person meeting, I think that that's item 5 on our agenda.
Yes.
Before we move on, you did give us the data element definitions, the GPSIS information. What are we supposed to do with that, Don?
That came up at the last meeting when we were talking about the filings and what went into the filings. I think that it seemed like we would want to revisit this when we got back to talking about the filings, but I did want everybody to have them since the subcommittee asked for them. So to me, these seem like more of a marker for when the subcommittee returns to the question of filings and caseload.
Okay, thank you. So committee members, let's discuss how we want to be prepared for our next in-person meeting at September 17th. And I think the item asks us to define what kind of decisions we would want to be making at that meeting. Is that correct, Don?
The objectives, maybe, of the next discussion.
Right.
This is Judge Zeidler. I have one thing that I would want us to discuss at some point that was sparked in the letter from Los Angeles dependency lawyers, which is how we currently are dealing and how we want to deal with increases and decreases in caseloads over the year or over the years.
Judge Borak, this is David. Could I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
Would we, taking off on the concept that Sherry had brought up, and that is updating the components that identify what the funding distribution model would be, I'm hoping that we can at least take a look at the updating the data and how that translates into perhaps distributing the monies differently with new data. And, of course, the WAFA model, it has a built-in updating feature based on workload. And, you know, if we're interested in revising the model so it can be somewhat flexible based on workload and growth, et cetera, that may be something that we should strive to examine at our next meeting as well. So, you know, I'm certainly willing to assist in that part along with Sherry working with Dawn as well. So I think that's something that we should consider looking at as well.
This is Mark Cobb. Can I ask you for clarification on that? So we wouldn't be I think what you're asking is not that we talk about how to update the funding, but simply how the model can change to reflect current filings and current workload. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. The data elements that we have in there have been, you know, particularly when you're talking about salaries, et cetera, are very old. And I think being able to update that, at least that component, may give us a better idea how far off we are or how close we are. I think it would be helpful to at least look at the information and see how impactful it is, realizing that, of course, we need a lot more funding than we currently receive. But, you know, having the table updated with the new data would be helpful.
Yeah, I agree that it should always stay current. And that's how, like you said, that's how WAFM's designed, and this can be designed that way, too. Thanks for clarifying.
And actually, that's the value when you're looking at a salary, for example, of using the BLS factor and an average salary for the state, because the BLS is updated on an annual basis, and so that number changes in WAFM and is applied to individual counties. And so the real hard part will be trying to get the averages updated, or if we went that route, or going through this survey. And so if we can't do it annually, I agree with David, we should have it in our recommendation that it gets updated every other year, every third year, whatever, but it shouldn't be the delay that we've waited this long to do it.
Go ahead.
This is Sherry, and I apologize. Regarding the update for workload, I had assumed, and maybe this is an incorrect assumption, I had assumed that because the workload model currently includes a three-year rolling average, that we would continue to do that as for the workload part. Dawn, isn't that right? It's a three-year rolling average?
Right now it is, yes.
Yeah. And so if that's something we need to confirm in the model, I think we should do that. I think a three-year average is good because it smooths out any huge fluctuations that can occur year to year. And a rolling average is important. And the workload component, not so much the salary and other components, but the workload component could easily be done on an annual basis and included in a three-year average rolling number.
I think that at every face-to-face meeting, we want to get closer to our goals, which is, of course, to provide the council the information on the specific items that they requested, and in addition, the other suggestions like, you know, how do we provide more updated and flexible information going forward. So, we were charged with looking at salaries, which is what we focused on today, and we'll probably have a lot of good data for our face-to-face meeting to analyze and be able to address that part of our charge. Counting cases, how we do it, I think we should want to be closer to being able to make a decision about the kind of data that should be used to count the cases, correct, by our face-to-face meeting?
I agree.
Yep.
Okay. And then what kind of progress have we made regarding the small court funding methodology and the difference between large courts and small courts and things like that? We haven't really focused on that much.
No.
So should we want to make some progress on that at our face-to-face meeting? And if so, what are we going to need in order to do that?
This is Sherry Judge. May I ask Don some questions? I think he probably has a lot of the answers. Don't you know, Don, when they run into problems with hiring attorneys because there's not any within their county, and if they have difficulties in paying a salary that might be closer to their county requirements because of travel and other requirements? Aren't you aware, or your office aware, yeah, of some of the issues? Could you articulate and bring with you a list of what some of those issues are and how many counties are having those issues so we can, okay, see how broad the problem is?
Yes. Yes, and it usually relates either to a spike in cases, which the attorneys they have on staff or on contract or don't have enough hours to take, or it relates to a trial with where there's costs for expert witnesses and things like that, lots of conflict counsel. So, yeah, I'll bring those.
Don, this is Judge Botke. I think one of the other things that needs to be addressed is, what are we talking about specifically when it comes to small county? You know, what is the definition? And when we go to the far end of the spectrum of a really small county, are we talking about, like, for example, Alpine and Sierra, the smallest, mm-hmm, of the smalls, where the caseload is much, much smaller, and they might only have a few, if any, dependency cases in a year?
Okay. I mean, I can bring the breakout of the caseloads in different counties, and the subcommittee can think about how they want to break it. I'd like to mention too that Alpine had a case last year, the first in probably 5 years.
One case.
Mm-hmm.
Don, I think that we should be able to mine some of the data from the surveys to address the question about the ratio for having parent clients versus children's clients.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can do that.
And we'll do that. We'll do that at our face-to-face meeting also.
Okay.
So that addresses specifically what the council wants from us. Is there anything else other than what we've already talked about that people are looking for to do at our face-to-face meeting, committee members?
That sounds pretty comprehensive.
Okay, I like to end meetings on time. It's 12:25 as by my watch.
That's even early, right?
It's even early, right. Does staff have any other questions for us before we conclude this meeting?
No.
So this is Judge Smith. Our next meeting is September 17th.
Yes, it is, Judge.
And it's an in-person meeting in San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And, John, you will be sending us some preparation and some things that we can consider as you deem appropriate, correct?
Oh, yes. It's a lot of complicated information to work through and complicated decisions, so we will try to get out some options for you to consider in the next couple of weeks so that we have time then to set up the materials and post them ahead of time.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Okay, should we all say goodbye?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.